TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
And five, touchdown!
All the time. A division of Bell Media.
If you want to know the real deal about the three, we're going to take you with triple chop. We're going to bring you up to speed.
TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us online at tsn1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk this Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290. Coming up in about 15 minutes' time from ESPN.com, Scott Burnside is going to join us. A little bit later on in the show, 1:30 in the afternoon, Dr. Norman O'Reilly, professor of sports business at the University of Ottawa. And then in the final hour, he's our scouting correspondent for Illegal Curve. Kyle Kozier is going to join us. We'll talk some NCAA hockey. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website with all your latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my two very close friends and colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, boys. As usual, it's great to be here.
That's it?
That's all you're going to say?
That's it?
Because your face...
You look like you had something else on your mind.
I wasn't going to steal Richie's thunder. I was going to let Richie, you know...
I think we should just warn people already that we've been eating candy for a while now, so it might be a little bit hyper.
Yeah, I don't know why. What's going on in our lives. I don't know if we have to talk about some things off air, but... The collection of food that we have in here is not really conducive to healthy eating. We've got, for the listeners at home, Twizzlers, Super Nibs, Fuzzy Peaches, and powdered donuts, along with a selection of coffees and various caffeinated beverages.
Or as Ezzy generally calls it, breakfast.
set you up for that one.
Yeah, that one was a fastball down the middle of the plate there. Good afternoon, Richard, as well. How are you?
Drew, I'm doing well. I'm excited to talk about the Jets home opener. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Starts in about an hour, I think.
Down at the MTS Center yesterday, I was watching them take the ads off the boards.
Your options are either to laugh or cry at this point in time, especially today, given that it's supposed to be the season opener for the Jets. We'll choose to laugh.
Well, the Bomber fans can be happy that they were really worried because the game was actually moved up.
Yeah.
There was a time change and it was going to be an overlap between the Bombers and the Jets.
That's right. There was going to be a time conflict. And I have a suspicion, and I don't know this at all, that had there been a Jets game tonight, an actual Jets game, they would have done something with the Bombers game to move it to accommodate both people who wanted to go to both games.
But if the Bombers are scheduled first, shouldn't the Jets have changed the time?
Again, you would think so. And that's something they should work on for next season, for future, to make sure that it's one thing, there was a game last year where the Bombers and the Jets went back-to-back.
That was fine,
But there was an hour gap. I mean, Ezzy and I were at the Bomber game, then we hustled down to the MTS
Center. I had to bridge the gap on the station.
That's right. Exactly. So that worked fine.
Remo and Dave Manouk.
Yeah, that's right. And then, but going forward, they shouldn't ever overlap. It doesn't make any sense, really. You can work around that, relatively easy.
Not, 10 home games for the Bombers, not including playoffs, and including one exhibition game.
Yeah.
And those 10 games should,
should be standalone games. Yeah. But, of course, it's not going to be an issue for the next few years because the NHL is probably not going to play until 2018, 2019, something like that.
That's true.
Yeah. Let's talk about the... news, quote unquote, in the CBA discussions this week, and that was a good segment. So let's go to break. And we're back.
It's really not funny. I mean, it's the truth. We have a situation where it's almost like the Fear brothers go to these meetings to meet with Gary Bettman and Bill Daly and all the other NHL executives, and it's almost like they each have a binder full of notes or a briefcase. These guys use briefcases because they're professionals, obviously, unlike me, who just uses a Hilroy binder. But they go to this meeting, and it's almost like they have notes.
Is it a five-star binder?
It's a five-star binder, yes. It's almost like they each have a pile of notes. They put them down on a table, and they say, okay, we're going to meet for an hour. But really, each side has their own notes, and they're not really even addressing the other side's issues, really. And there's no news to talk about. I mean, you're still hearing rhetoric about how they're not talking about the core economic issues. And the reality is, guys, when when they're going to get down to really settling this, they're going to be meeting for a long time. And that's when there's going to be, we were talking about this last week with Sean McDonald, when there's the tipping point, the boiling point, when, you know, American Thanksgiving. Right now,
there's a deadline, and for whatever reason, the NHL and the NHLPA think that the deadlines don't really apply to them, being the deadlines at the start of the season. They think that they can afford to lose more games, unlike the NFL and unlike Major League Baseball and maybe unlike the NBA if they don't come back at all. And it's troublesome in that from that perspective. And I anticipate the game losing more steam. It's not exactly like the game was
chugging along like a...
Yeah, it's not exactly, Drew. I mean, you had the Rangers with the block shots, and you had, you know, overall, the postseason had its moments in the first round there, but it didn't exactly get better with, you know, the Devils and Kings won the Cup, but the Devils and Kings wasn't exactly the most exciting Stanley Cup final ever. And
it's not late 80s hockey.
Right, so, I mean, that lends itself to the argument that when they come back, you're not selling necessarily the quality of the game. You're not going to make huge transformations like they did the last time and sell it and say, you know, thank you, fans, right?
Right.
So this time around, you're kind of just going at it over money. Fans have become completely disinterested in anything you have to say on both sides, I really do believe. And I try and, in my opinion, I'm not really casting blame on one over the other. Probably a little bit more owners and players, but at the end of the day, both sides are responsible. Both sides are responsible when there's no creative solutions. There's no, and the thing is, Drew, so you offer, and as you offer 10 creative solutions, and you say, here's some options, let's discuss these. Maybe that gets you to the table. But Donald Fehr and Gary Bettman sit on opposite sides of the table, and both don't want to make a move because they're worried about showing weakness. Well, you can make a move and still not show weakness. Well, and the problem is, again, we talked about it last week, you're getting to these old style guys, you know, Gary Bettman from the big firm in New York, the litigator, the guy who was part of the crushing the players in the NBA in the 80s. And this whole idea of everything has to be done that way. And I don't think they move with the times necessarily. And I just don't think that people see any. I realize it's a money issue, but there are creative ways to come to a solution, and everybody knows them.
There's only creative ways if people want to be creative. And like you, I think to your point is that there's no evidence that either side really wants to think outside the box.
No, there isn't. And right now, these guys each have playbooks, and you know, right now they're following the playbook. They have their notes. They're not strained. They're not going to be. It isn't in the game plan for either side to. I mean, I guess it's in the game plan in the sense that if one side proposes something, mm-hmm. there's a contingency plan for the path that you're following now. But right now, the facts are the games have been canceled till October 24th. So we're not going to have hockey for the next 11 days.
Well, I mean,
we're going to have more games canceled next week or at least within the next 10 days. So realistically, you could probably say we're not going to have hockey till the middle of November almost at this point.
And that's if a deal gets done in the next week or so.
Exactly.
And again, I think you're thinking with logic there. And I think I've been thinking with logic in terms of there's too much money on the table for them to stay out this long. And I don't think they really care.
Well, I
don't think they really care. And I think they're worried about, we're going to talk to Norm O'Reilly about some of the business issues here, but I don't think they actually care.
It was either Jim Slater or Brian Little, I can't recall which one, said earlier this week how frustrating they find it that these guys meet for 30 minutes and then they don't really come to any sort of common ground, and then they stop meeting and they don't meet again for another 3 days.
And we should point out, Drew, there's no meetings planned for this week yet.
No, I think they're talking about maybe talking sometime in, you know, towards the middle of the week. But I mean, they met for what?
The fans have the power in the sense that the fans can provide a backlash. The fans don't go out and buy tickets. They don't buy paraphernalia. They don't do a lot of things in that way. You know what happens? That doesn't just hurt the owners, because we're talking about a system that shares revenue. So you're talking about something that if it hurts overall revenues, it thereby brings down player salaries. The fans can play a role in this, or are they going to have this unconditional love and buy anything and everything that's being sold to them?
Well, and that's the question. I mean, after the last lockout, 2004-2005, the fans came back, and they came back very quickly.
And Gary Bettman, if you go back to the things, basically alluded to lowering ticket prices and things like that, nothing that he followed through on.
That was the supposed, that was the hook that they used to try and keep the fans as you know, on side, saying this is a good thing for the fans, is your ticket prices will get lower, you'll save money,
it's
all
like
that.
Gary Bettman faces the music. I mean, he won't go on to Hockey Night in Canada with Ron McLean. He refuses to go on.
Right, and the thing is, let's be honest here.
$8 million a year. You figure he'd answer hard questions.
This doesn't just fall on Gary Bettman, but the fans were lied to, and not only did ticket prices not go down, they went up every year, and there's a reason why revenues have gone up, okay? It's pretty simple economics here. Revenues have gone up because the TV deal came in the U.S. and because ticket prices went up, and obviously there was many other factors, but we're in a situation where the NHL players are willing to take the stance that we're willing to sit out a certain amount of time. Well, in fact, they're being locked out, but really they're accepting a lockout to basically, you know, not accepting it, but they're not negotiating an agreement to end the lockout and basically wanting to keep their share of the revenue. But what they're doing is, if they decide to go another year, just like in 2004 or 2005, not getting into the whole, you know, whether the owners won with the salary cap or anything, but the players will lose 100% of their salaries to save 15 to 20% this year. So if they're willing to do that again, and you talk to some of these guys...
Revenues will go down.
Revenues will go down. So really...
Classic Bomber play right there.
If there's a... Yeah, as the Bombers start their game here. I mean, you're going to have another... Again, what I've said this entire time is you lose another season, everybody loses, nobody wins. And if Gary Bettman can't see that, then he should just come out and say, you know what? We're just wanting to save money. This isn't about the future, and the NHLPA
is... all spin. And I say, when Donald Fehr and Gary Bettman talk, it's all spin. It's all rhetoric. And
do you get the sense, and I mean, I get the sense anecdotally, is that the fans now are more frustrated with the players than they are with the owners, because the players have not made any sort of counter offer.
I think the fans are frustrated with everything. And I think what you're seeing is all the writers, you're generally seeing, you know, the perspectives of the writers a lot of the times, I think, are shaped by who their sources are and where their sources are.
Yep.
And I think that people are generally taking everything with a grain of salt and saying, okay, I mean, I don't care either way. Get it done. We don't care anymore.
Right.
You take our money and you treat us like garbage. That's all. At the end of the day, I mean, who pays the bills?
Well, the fans do.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, Richie. 2004, we all remember that, and it wasn't that long ago. The media was very much more anti-players than this time around. If you look at the media, I mean, guys, the NHL was the first, and everybody knows this by now, the first professional league out of the Big Four to have a full year lockout. The NHL, the little guy at the table.
No other league has done that. And so Gary Bettman already has that, and is, to me, checkered track record.
Right.
And if you were to add another one on there, I think it'd be time for him to move aside.
It's hard to give up an $8 million a year job.
Well, I think it's time for the owners to act instead of him, you know, giving them. Yeah. The thing is, you know, I want to talk about this later, Drew. You know, there's an article in the Globe, I think it was by Dave Schultz, talking about how smart Bettman is. And we don't doubt in this room, certainly, his intelligence. His intelligence is probably...
Is that what it's really about, though?
But that's the point, is exactly. Because intelligence doesn't lead itself to solutions and necessarily to the best outcome. It's just intelligence. Maybe sometimes not the most intelligent guys can get an outcome that's better for everybody else. Just because he's intelligent doesn't mean he's working for the best interests of everyone, or even the owners for that matter. He has so much power within the owners. I'm surprised owners, who generally speaking want a lot of power, give him so much power. He's got too much power. It's disproportionate. And
the owners seem to skate above everything on an individual basis. You never hear the fans' vitriol for their local owner. The fans save their vitriol for Gary Bettman, and that's a question that, you know, I think is a reasonable one to ask.
Because of the power structure, the structure of the actual NHL business, it could be six owners driving the bus right now.
And it sounds like it is. It sounds like it's, you know, Leopold and it's Jeremy Jacobs in Boston and Ed Snyder in Philadelphia.
Well, that's not a conspiracy theory. That's the way it is.
Yeah. But you never hear those guys about, you know, being the ones heavily criticized. It's always Bettman who gets the blame.
Well, sure, but my bigger issue is, if there are 30 owners, don't we live in a... I realize the system isn't necessarily as democratic as maybe some other systems could be, meaning the NHL system of ownership and board of governors, but would you not want it to be majority rule? If you put it to a vote right now at the owners, what would the vote be as for possible outcomes and how to reach a solution?
I think it'd be pretty close.
So do I. And so who are we representing here?
That's a good question. Let's go to break. We'll have much more on this throughout the show. When we come back, Scott Burnside from ESPN is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know him from ESPN.com. Scott Burnside. Scott, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. How are things in Winnipeg today?
Well, we were supposed to have our home opener and our season opener, but we don't. So, you know, that I think answers the question in and of itself.
Very true. Yeah, I think you you share the misery that has been felt or is being felt in 29 other NHL cities. A bit of a shame.
Absolutely. It is definitely a shame. You're actually in Dallas today for the United States Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Ed Olczyk, Mike Modano, and Lou Lamoriello are being inducted into the Hall of Fame there. So we thought we'd actually spend some time talking about that, first of all, and then we can get into the more depressing CBA issues after that.
So that sounds good. Yeah, the ceremony is here in Dallas on Monday evening. Monday. I'm actually going to head up to a CHL game. The Allen Americans, which are owned in part by Craig Ludwig and Richard Matvichuk, Steve Duchesne, Ed Belfour, Mike Modano. At least all those guys have a role, if not an ownership role, then some sort of role with the team. And, so that should be kind of fun. And then the ceremonies will be here in Dallas on Monday night.
One of the players being inducted is Ed Olczyk, and of course he's well-known to Winnipeg hockey fans with his time with the original Winnipeg Jets. In baseball, the players go into the Hall of Fame sort of with the team cap on their head. You know, what team would you most associate Ed Olczyk with in the course of his NHL career?
That's a great question. I don't know whether it would be a Jets. I kind of like that we don't do that with the Hall of Fame. I mean, for some guys it's easy, but for a guy like Ed Olczyk, and you know, as great a player as he was, and certainly he had a brief stint as a head coach in Pittsburgh. For me, I think of Ed Olczyk as the voice of or one of those sort of very distinct voices of hockey in America. So I think of him, you know, sort of wearing not to get too schmaltzy about it, but sort of a pan league hat, as opposed to, you know, whether it was the Rangers or Winnipeg. So I think of him as being more the voice of a league as opposed to a specific player with a specific team. So I don't know. That sounds like maybe it's a bit of a wishy-washy answer, but I'm going to stick with that.
Scott, and the other player being inducted is Mike Modano. Easy, obviously, to pick a Minnesota / Dallas hat for him. But what do you most remember about Modano? I mean, it seems like the generation before had, you know, Guy Lafleur skating down the ice with that hair, blowing backwards, and you have Modano. It seemed like he was that guy for our generation, really. Obviously, with the helmet on, but he'd always curl back in his own zone with great speed through the neutral zone. How do you most remember him, or what do you most remember about him?
Well, I guess I remember a couple of things, and I think of him in that same sense. It's interesting, of course, to, you know, when you think about the ebb and flow of teams and what happens to them. You know, we saw for many years Colorado being one of those teams every year that would not just spend to the max, but would bring in big stars and could always be counted on to make a serious run at the Cup. But, you know, people sometimes forget now because the stars did fall on hard times and change in ownership there with Dix leaving, and that the Stars went toe-to-toe with Detroit and Colorado and created some absolutely phenomenal playoff memories. I think of Edmonton beating a very, very good Dallas team with the Curtis Joseph sort of save for the century kind of thing. Obviously you think of Modano's team, Brett Hull, the crease goal in 99. I must admit, the one thing that sticks out for me, and it's probably unfair, but I'll say it anyway, that after the Olympics in 2006 in Torino, Mike Modano, some harsh criticism for USA Hockey, which I thought, I think it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, but he has always been a guy that has spoken his mind. He's been very forthright. He's been very, very candid about how he feels and things like that. And I think you have to appreciate stuff like that. And he really was a huge part of, you know, the Stars' move from Minnesota to Dallas was a seminal event, right? I mean, it took a team out of a traditional hockey market. It came to a non-traditional place. The Stars became, for a long time, the poster team for how to behave in a non-traditional market. They poured money into grassroots hockey. They built arenas. Their players were visible in the community. I mean, Mike Modano he remains a huge star across the sporting landscape in Dallas. And there's no secret or no coincidence to the fact that this ceremony, which moves around from year to year, is being held in Dallas. And on a year where they're going to honor Mike Modano, it's absolutely apropos that it's here in Dallas because he remains a huge figure in the sporting landscape here.
Scott, as I'm sure you're aware, you know, New Jersey Devils general manager Lou Lamoriello is a pretty unique guy, and he's had a lot of success with the New Jersey Devils, and he's been there for obviously 20 plus years. But he flies under the radar a little bit with some of his moves with the Devils, and then obviously his connection with USA Hockey. Do you think we're ever going to see another Lou Lamoriello in the next decade?
Well, no, he does really represent a different, it's not even a dying breed, a completely different breed. No one is like Lou Lamoriello. Very few men have developed the kind of loyalty that we've seen Lou Lamoriello develop in building those teams in New Jersey. And you think about guys like Scott Stevens and Martin Brodeur staying where they could have had more money elsewhere, but staying to be part of something that has, with the very odd exception, been certainly a playoff team and a playoff contender. Even we saw last year, and I didn't like that team all that much. I thought they would struggle to make the playoffs if they made it at all, and here they were, Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Finals, and that's a Lou Lamoriello team for you, right from top to bottom. And guys like Scott Niedermeyer, who only left to join his brother in Anaheim. It's obviously changed a little bit for Lou since the lockout. He struggled with the cap. There were the issues with signing Ilya Kovalchuk and the penalties, both in terms of monetary fine and draft picks that the Devils had to pay for what the league deemed was circumnavigating the salary cap. There have been some missteps for Lou Lamoriello along the way, but he remains true to his spirit. I remember being in New Jersey, must be 2 years ago, right around now. John McClain had been named the head coach, and the team got off to just a ghastly start. Zach Parise got hurt early on. Kovalchuk was struggling. It was clear that John McClain wasn't going to be the guy to get it done. And Lou Lamoriello, day in, day out, watched every minute of practice, took all the blame that it was. It took everything on his shoulders. And again, I think that's why people have such a high regard for Lou Lamoriello. He's not a guy to throw people under the bus. He doesn't. He doesn't pull you aside and give you, to whisper in your ear. He truly is a very unique person. And you're right. We won't see another person like that in the NHL, I don't think, just the way that times have changed and how the game has evolved. But he continues to make his mark.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Scott Burnside of ESPN.com. Scott, moving to the CBA, we've had a couple of offers from the owners. We had that initial offer from the players, but nothing from their side since then. Is it time, in your opinion, for the players to make a counter-proposal?
Well, it'd be nice if somebody did something, right? it's easy. I think as time goes on, initially, especially with the owner's first offer, I think a lot of people were maybe shocked at how stark it was, and certainly I think very quietly the players were upset by it. I think it probably set a tone that maybe the owners didn't even anticipate in terms of sort of widening the divide that already exists between the two sides. But you can certainly point blame both ways now. For me, the whole labor relations expedition in Alberta and Quebec, a colossal waste of time. The players' attempts only to annoy the NHL, no doubt paying them back for being annoyed by either that first offer or other things that have happened during this non-negotiation that we've seen since the middle of July. But someone needs to step forward. I think, whatever moral high ground the players may have had a month or 2 months ago, and you can certainly blame the owners because they've behaved miserably in many ways, I think, throughout this negotiation and what happened in the offseason with all the contracts that were signed disingenuously, as it turns out. But someone has to look at the big picture here, because we are speeding ever closer to losing a second season in 8 years. My sense in America is that if the fans were forgiving last time, they will be exponentially less forgiving this time. My sense in Canada, it's always hard to tell with Canadian fans because they are, I think, perpetually forgiving. But I think, sponsors and people on the fringe of the game, it's going to be hard to woo them back. And I think both the players and the owners, they really need to take a hard look at that. And, would it be nice if the players came to the table with something other than what we've seen a number of weeks ago? sure, would it be nice if the owners came out and said, okay, well, tell you what, we'll take some of this stuff off the table that we know is troublesome to the players in terms of maybe its length of contract, restrictions, extending the entry-level deal, arbitration, things like that. But, you know, time is wasted, right? I mean, we for a game that has so much to lose and then really so much going for it, it really does boggle the mind that the two sides remain as far apart as they at least appear publicly to be right now.
Scott, you talk about those American franchises and maybe some of the fans being unforgiving, and rightfully so, frankly. Do you think, you know, one of the solutions is possibly to move a team? Well, obviously, Phoenix is sitting there and has been for some time. Move a team or two to a more successful market, thereby expanding the pie, and 50% of a higher pie is still more money. Doesn't that seem like a possible logical solution to the problems we face right now?
Well, yeah, sure, although, you know, where exactly are you going to move the team? And, you know, people look at the seamless move of my old hometown team, the Atlanta Thrashers, to Winnipeg, and that was a perfect storm, right? There was a building, there was an owner, there was a fan base that had already been established. I suppose it looks like an NHL-ready arena will be built in Quebec City. Is it a slam dunk that the team could go back there? You know, I think the NHL needs to be absolutely sure. The last thing the NHL can afford to do, especially after the fiasco in Phoenix, is to you know, sort of start down the relocation path again and have something blow up. You know, have something blow up in Quebec City or in Markham, if that's the other option, or wherever you might go. With all due respect, I think it's sometimes a Canadian conceit that, well, we just move more teams out of the States and into Canada, everything would be better, and it may be so, but, you think about the teams that have struggled and have walked close to that edge in the last decade or 15 years, and that includes a number of Canadian teams in Ottawa, or Calgary, Buffalo Sabres, the Pittsburgh Penguins. Those were teams that people were wondering aloud and speculating, oh, should they move? The Nashville Predators are another. They continue to be named, oh, maybe the Predators should move. That team is in actually very good financial situation right now. Yes, they're a small market team. Yes, they need help in terms of revenue sharing, but the fan base is solid there. The local ownership is as solid as it's ever been there. So I think you have to be careful. We just say, well, let's just shuffle the deck a little bit and things would be better. Because I'm not sure it necessarily would be the case. I mean, there were reasons that teams left Winnipeg and Quebec City. They were well documented, but there were reasons that it happened. And I think the league, that's been their history. They're very cautious about making those kinds of moves. And, you know, it may yet happen that there's a team in Quebec City, and I'm sure it would do well there. But I think the league, and rightfully so, needs to be cautious before they start to move people around in terms of consistency and the continuity of the league.
What about possibly, instead of moving teams, just shutting a team or two down with Phoenix, for example? And the solution there is, if the PA were to be against that and if the NHL were to concede that this wasn't successful, as it clearly, to me, is evident that it hasn't been successful, but what about then maybe shutting down a team and expanding the rosters, creating more spots for players on other teams so there's not actually jobs lost, but at least, you know, there's a huge team hemorrhaging money no longer exists, and maybe the league's healthier for that.
Yeah, and you could be right. And again, I don't know whether hockey will ever work in Phoenix or not, but anybody who watched any of those playoff games last spring, this is a team that went to a Western Conference final. And so, we're debating, even just theoretically, should we close down a team that just went to, had its most successful season ever? They sold out, if I'm not mistaken, I believe they sold out every single playoff game, certainly within a few seats if they didn't. I know it has been a struggle there, but this is a team that's been run hand-to-mouth by the NHL for the last 3 years. I don't know that we have a true sense of what that market is like. Things were tough in here in Dallas, and with Mr. Gilardi now taking over the Stars, it looks like they may, the stability of ownership is so crucial to success, to connections within the community, to sponsorships, all of those things. If you don't have strong ownership, then you can think about Terry Pegula in Buffalo. You think about what Mario Lemieux has done in terms of stabilizing that franchise in Pittsburgh. So I'm not sure it's fair to write off the Coyotes just yet. Who knows? Maybe it never gets done there. Maybe they can't find an owner. Maybe it's just it becomes a wasteland. You're right. They just shut it down. But again, I think you open up other issues, scheduling, and maybe you shut it down and then make a lot of money in expansion fees and move that team into Markham. Maybe it solves all your problems.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Scott Burnside of ESPN.com.
Scott, there's been some speculation that some of the top revenue owners aren't in favor of this lockout, and obviously, as compared to the last lockout, and obviously that's speculation because no owner's ever going to go on the record, and say that they're not in favor of this lockout, or that goes for any owner, not just the top revenue owners, but in this particular CBA dispute, what side do you think is going to cave first?
Well, you know, it is an interesting debate because again, going back to this idea that the lockout of idiocy with the $3.3 billion in revenue and all sorts of cool things happening with the game and the game is shut down. So I have no doubt that that within the ownership group, if you pull them quietly and candidly, that that many would prefer to be playing. But if the expectation is that someone or a group of owners is going to try and topple the old guard, Jeremy Jacobs and the Boston Bruins and the others, the other hawk-like owners who are pushing the hard line, demanding significant givebacks, and not just givebacks, but immediate givebacks from the players, I don't see that happening. The NHL is a very tight little community. Gary Bettman does not like opposition. He does not like loose lips. I think it would be shocking if there ever was a palace coup that saw the owners reverse their course and become much more conciliatory. I'm not saying that these owners don't have some room to move to give and get a deal. I believe that there is a middle ground that can be approached with both sides giving. But if you're looking for a sudden reversal of fortune from the owners, I don't think that happens. And then you have to look at the players, and I don't doubt their will for one second. But to me, the logic escapes me. If we lose another season, all that money gone, players will never get it back. Players will have to retire. To fight on principle and to have that happen again, and I understand all the rationale for it, in the bottom line world, it just makes absolutely no sense. And so if you had to guess, I'd say at some point the players will have to move maybe more towards the middle than they want to. But again, I think it has to be done quickly, or the damage is going to be so great that I think it becomes harder and harder for both sides to find a compromise, because both feel that they, as this goes along, they will feel that they've given up too much.
Scott, we'll let you go on this last question. Look into your crystal ball. What percent chance do you give that there will be an NHL season?
Well, I still remain a glass half full guy. I still think we'll see hockey before the end of the calendar year. Now, maybe I'm being foolishly optimistic, but I would say I'm hopeful by December 1st, maybe before, maybe American Thanksgiving. Remember last year, I think they introduced the Thanksgiving weekend games on the NHL with sort of a new thing. I think we might see that.
Well, I like your optimism. Let's hope that's the case. Scott Burnside from ESPN.com, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
All right, no problem.
Take care, Scott. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Scott Burnside of ESPN.com for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes and on the TSN1290.ca website. You can also follow us on Twitter while you're at it, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
I want to give the Soch, Dale Sawchuk, a shout-out right now. He's at this Bombers game. The Bombers, as we can see, are losing 60-0, but the Soch tweeted at us and said that he'd be listening to the show while at the Bombers game.
That's a
big fan right there. So shout out to Soch.
And you know, even if our show's bad, can't be that bad.
Can't be that bad.
Well, nothing's as bad as this game right now.
Compared to watching this junk.
Yeah, it's the Bombers are reverting back to form after last week's performance in Montreal. Let me tell you, it is. They've had the ball twice. They've gone two and out on the. Well, actually, they stopped Calgary two and out. Then they fumbled the punt. Then Calgary got a touchdown. Then the Bombers got the ball, went two and out. Calgary got a field goal. Then the Bombers got the ball and fumbled on the first play, and now Calgary got another touchdown. But on a positive note, they missed the convert. So, you know, 16-0 at the end of the first quarter there.
You know, Scott Burnside, who we just had on, said he's a glass half full type of guy. So if you are a glass half full type of guy, there's two things to be, you know, excited about in this game. Obviously, everyone's wearing pink. Great cause, Breast Cancer Research Month. That's a good thing and reason to watch this game. And it's still very early.
You're also a bottle empty kind of guy, is he?
Exactly. I love my pick a pop.
Yeah, that's
big,
the bottle.
Big
sure,
pick a pop.
We'll pretend that's the bottle.
That's the bottles.
Yeah. You know, we asked Scott Burnside this question. Let me ask you guys this question: is it time for the players to step up to the plate and give an offer?
Sure, why not? I mean, go ahead, make an offer. Try and do something. Doesn't mean you can, you know, they're worried, oh, you can never get it back. Once you put something on the table, you can never get it back. If unless you formally agree to something,
you can always pull things off the table.
Whatever, you don't have to agree to something. I mean, I don't understand that rationale. And if you move a little bit, you can move to ask for 53% or whatever, or do some creative way of not cutting down the salaries immediately. There's many ways to do it. Sure, put an offer forward, but I don't put that any more pressure on the owners than I do the players than I do the owners about an offer. If the owners want to be serious, put a different offer on the table. It doesn't mean anything. Don't interpret it in a way of, oh, it's a sign of weakness. That's all a bunch of garbage. Just put an offer on the table. Move closer. Show that it actually matters, and you want to get a deal done. And I don't think it's a matter of this weakness garbage that we keep hearing. I keep saying the word garbage because it is. Because all it is just them playing back and forth and doing basically sitting on press row in the Super Bowl. They go around, they do every media outlet possible, they send their message to people, and don't think for a second, people out there, that these messages haven't been practiced and written out. And they know exactly what they're saying, and you can ask them a question. And they're
probably interest group tested and everything else.
You ask them a question, and they're going to tell you what they want, not answer the question. Because they want to get their message out there. It's a PR war. And to be honest, I don't really listen to any of it. I don't mind reading about possible creative solutions and different options that the league has and the players have to get a deal done. But in terms of actual quotes from Gary Bettman, don't take those seriously at all. Bill Daly, don't take those seriously at all. And conversely, Donald Fair and Steve Fair, don't take those seriously at all. They're all just playing the media.
And Richie, as Sean McDonald said on the show, University of Manitoba Labor Relations and Commerce instructor.
I should point out, actually, Sean's first article for IllegalCurve.com is now available on the website. Yep. It was published earlier this week. He looked at the CBA. Remus can tweet it out right now. He looked at the CBA negotiations from the sort of the owner's standpoint to start.
And what Sean said is that, you know, they aren't deadline hunting, even though right now we know that the deadline, I mean, we know the facts are that, again, we know that there's probably not going to be hockey until at least mid-November, late November, just based on the fact that, you know,
the time frame right now is the time frame, right?
And, you know, a lot of people that seem to think that there's going to be half season, myself included, probably are looking at hockey starting somewhere in between early December and early January. I still believe that. So, I mean, you could pick a date, any date. But the fact that they are, one side is deadline hunting. Again, Eric Duhatchik wrote about this in the Globe and Mail. Mm-hmm. The NHL holds the hammer. That was the headline, and they hold the hammer. Whether or not the NHLPA wants to get serious and come up with a new proposal now or in 4 weeks, or the NHL forces them by their imposed deadline, which they haven't said at all because there's obvious reasons why they don't want to say that. But the NHLPA is going to have to come back at a proposal. And whatever language, whatever legalese that is, you know, it's going to have to address the hockey-related revenue. And they're going to have to do that in a way that isn't reducing the hockey-related revenue 1% for the first 4 years, which was their first proposal, which, by the way, is that's fine because that's the position they've taken. But eventually they're going to have to address the issue of how are we going to get 57% down to 50%? And if they include
be greedy and ask for it all at once.
Exactly. And sure, they're going to ask Richie for the free agency age to stay the same, maybe even go down, and they're going to ask for things that they got, you know, in the other
the system,
CBA.
The system in terms of the free agency and arbitration and all those things really should stay the same. I think for the most part it works. I don't really see a huge flaw in any of the systemic agreements that they made in terms of all those things I just talked about. In terms of the cut and the 50%, 57%, 43%, all the numbers, We've talked about this before. You know it's going to be around 50-50. The question is how to get there. And if the owners can get off their being stubborn and saying they want it immediately, and the players can get off and realize that they have to give up maybe 3 to 4 to 5 to 6% to make sure they don't lose 100% of their salary this year, then there you go. You have some common ground. And you look both sides, you know, it's a classic case, Drew. I guess we can leave it on this point. It's a classic comment. You know, if both sides aren't happy with the deal, it's probably fair.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shortly before 1 o'clock, this segment of the program is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue. Pizza baked, well done. Laura and I went out to Carbone last Saturday night before your little shindig there, Richie. Yes. Had a terrific, we had the Pepino.
The Pepino is
fabulous. I mean, I'm an arugula guy, as you well know.
It's great pizza.
I do know. Yeah. I've had a pizza with you before. There's a lot of arugula on there.
Drew's actually
And you also ate over your half.
And Drew's
I did
actually
not eat over my half. That is a falsehood.
It's a true statement.
I wholeheartedly respect the half and half rules related to pizza sharing.
We'll ask your wife about that. But I also had a Carbone on Wednesday night. It was great.
Yeah? You can't beat it. It's,
pick up. Right back, watch
some baseball. Exactly. Pick it up.
Did you see Bogo there?
I didn't see Bogo there.
Okay.
I wonder if he saw you there.
I assume that's what he does, is he goes around town saying, hey, I saw Ezzy.
Yeah. Yes.
He follows the Legal Curve on Twitter, so we're on his radar, Drew.
Something like that. World Cup of Hockey. It's been a number of years since we last saw this event. I mean,
8 years.
8 years. Yeah. I mean, going back to actually the last lockout. There's an article in today's Globe and Mail by our good friend Roy McGregor, who pretty much says that it sounds like, for all intents and purposes, there's going to be a World Cup of Hockey every 2 years.
No.
Pardon me, every four years in February.
Sorry, February. It's tough to say. It's not February, Drew, which I just said. It's like you said, February. February.
Thanks.
Like Wednesday.
Okay, that's good.
Okay, continue.
In the years, you know, there's 4 years between Olympic events.
Yes.
And then the halfway point there, there's going to be a World Cup of Hockey every 4 years
I love it.
On the 2 year off year
it's
between the Olympics.
Bring it back. It's essentially the same as soccer. If you have, you know, England, for example, they'll play in the World Cup every 4 years.
Yeah.
And then every four years they'll also play in the Euro Cup.
That's right.
So what they do is they have Euro 2000 and whatever it is. And so they have every 2 years you have an international event. And so of course the issue with the Euro Cup is that doesn't include obviously the South American countries that are strong in soccer. This one, on the other hand, will include all the best teams in the Olympics and then all the best teams in the World Cup. It'll be in February, so it's right in the middle of the season.
They'll shut down the NHL for a couple weeks. So, like, you know, Sochi, Russia, obviously, is the next Winter Olympics in 2014.
Yes.
So you'd see the World Cups of Hockey start in February of 2016.
Right. Maybe we get a game here, very possible.
Again, great for Winnipeg. But there, you know, when I saw that Roy McGregor posted this article, and hopefully, maybe if Reem's listening in there and he's not sleeping, he can link the article on. Just kidding, Reem. He can link the article on Twitter written by Roy McGregor. But there's a couple things that are, you know, what's the word? You know, conspiring in a good way. The perfect storm for this is that Pyongyang, South Korea, is where the other one is, which would create a similar type of TV scheduling nightmare like Nagano did. Remember in Nagano, I'm not saying that hockey in Nagano wasn't good, but all the games were on at 3 in the morning.
Yeah. In my opinion, if you're going to go to the Olympics, you can't pick and choose.
No,
I agree.
But
with
I'm just
you.
Saying that they're,
go or
they're
you don't.
It's Sochi's happening for sure, even though they haven't announced it.
Well, because guys like, and Roy touches on this, guys like Ovechkin said, we're going anyway, so you can't have that embarrassment.
But South Korea, I'm not saying that Olympic participation isn't going to happen. There's a couple things, too, that I think we should touch on, too, because there's the other thing with Donald Fehr, who was fundamental in founding the World Baseball Classic, and that's mentioned in the article.
Mm-hmm.
That can't be understated because the NHLPA's participation in this is huge. If the NHLPA is not on board for World Cup, it won't happen.
And this is the key, right? It's a moneymaker.
Of course.
Yeah, exactly.
And so what they can do is make up for the money they don't make in the Olympics. They can make it up every 2 years in the World Cup, and then everybody's happy because at the end of the day, if you don't know the answer, my professor said it to me, the answer is money.
Yeah,
and that's the end of the day.
No,
it's easy to come together on this. The NHL and NHLPA can easily come together on this. Why? Because they both make money.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly right.
And you have, and the thing is, I mean, we all remember the 96 World Cup. It's funny, the 2004 World Cup, I don't know if it was because
I was there. Two
I don't
games.
Know I don't know if it was because Richie the lockout followed it, but the 2004 World Cup is not ingrained in people's memory. If you talk,
well, who did Canada beat in the finals?
Finland.
I mean,
Canada beat Finland, and remember,
but we don't have any
trophy. Remember the weird looking trophy?
Yeah,
it was designed by some architect or something.
The reason why nobody remembers 2004 is A, Canada really steamrolled everybody in that tournament,
right?
And secondly, we don't have a great, you know, hockey rivalry against the Finns, so there's no overwhelming passion like you saw in 87,
96,
or 90,
the first one,
96. You're talking about Canada, going back to Canada Cups as well.
Yeah, I don't think it was represented that well, and the truth of the matter is, and that's what it works against you, right, is when you have the NHL and NHLPA working together there. It wasn't exactly the best relationship before that.
Right, exactly. You were going into labor war, right?
Publicity wasn't great. I went to two of the games. The games were terrific. The hockey was great. You had Lemieux playing. You had Team Canada, and I watched them play against the U.S. and Slovakia, and they steamrolled both of them, really. They were too good that year. But yeah, Drew, it's a good point that just didn't seem to have the same kind of attention. Now, 96, remember, there was no Olympics, so that was really the Canada Cup after 91.
Yeah. Right.
And
that was the first international tournament after
after the 91
not counting World Hockey Championships
and Olympics, but it wasn't with NHL players.
And that's
players.
What you had the U.S. that was that event. Obviously, Miracle on Ice can't be understated. But in '96, it was again the U.S. wasn't supposed to win. If
the
you remember
high stick
that.
Or the kick-in goal, which one did you have more of an issue with?
Well, they were both terrible. Tony Amonte,
kick-in or the Hall's high stick?
Yeah, that was bad.
Let me ask you guys this question.
I know before you ask that question,
or say they're not having a center on a backup center on for the draw. In his own zone.
You're still in therapy about this stuff, eh?
That was a terrible loss. Ugh.
That was bad. There's a lot of holes punched in walls, Drew, but the reality is, again, you know, if they're talking about this and they're all on the same page, it's great to read that this is coming back. I'm a big fan of the World Cup hockey, and I know there are some people that say, well, we have the Olympics. Why do we need the World Cup hockey? If they're going to change it from September to February, though, the timing is way better.
Well,
you can't do it in September.
The other issue, of course, is... You know, you're talking about a little bit different of a system, and I don't know how they're going to do it. I wrote an article, actually, about it on Overtime, Drew, about how you change it a little bit and have maybe best of threes to make it not, a one-game final. But also, the other issue is this. You're going to have, in my opinion, not at least hopefully, you know, the overtime format. No shootouts, and so
No shootouts.
So like an NHL playoff hockey. So you
sudden death.
You could have, in theory... A three overtime,
especially when
final World Cup game.
Especially when it's a best of three and not that one-off game.
Also true.
It breeds animosity as the series goes on.
So I mean, you could do that. To me, and the point was in the article, what you want to do is shorten the round robin because it's fairly meaningless.
Yeah.
Especially if all teams are going to make it and it just goes to seeding. Get rid of that and get a longer playoff system in order. It'd be great.
Yeah, that's a good call. Three games. Three round robin games, and then you have best of three, best of three, maybe best of five or something
like that.
That.
I mean, depends on time.
And again, comparing it to the World Baseball Classic, which I believe Japan won the first two.
And there's another one coming up this year.
They're trying to make they would be well, and that's been successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can get Donald Fehr really behind it, which it seems like he is, and get sponsors. You turn this into
sponsors
a similar event.
The sponsors will line up for this in a second.
Yeah. And again, like Richie said, there could be a game in Winnipeg, which would be great for Jets fans.
Before we have to go to break at the top of the hour, let me ask you guys this question. Should this be... What do they do with the World Hockey Championships, which still are contested on a yearly basis in Europe? There's still big business in Europe.
I don't think this affects it, Drew, because the World Hockey Championships are usually in April.
I'm saying, is it time to get rid of the World Hockey Championships?
I mean, we don't really care in Canada. That's an issue for them, and I'm not trying to defer in terms of answering. Answering the question, Drew, the article that Roy writes alludes to the fact that they would get rid of the World Championships in Olympic years, and I assume they keep them for the rest, because again, we get back to the answer, right?
Money.
Yeah.
But again, you have a completely...
You're making money, why are you getting rid of it?
I don't think that those... I know we got to go to break here really quickly, but I don't see the two conflicting, especially the timing.
I just don't think that there's a reason for the World Hockey Championships to exist in that case.
It's a different tournament.
Maybe you have it only every.
If it's not a best on best competition.
But we don't. I mean, that's again, it's money. But hey, if you want to work at it in that scenario and view it in terms of a 4-year sphere,
right?
What about the 2 years where there's no Olympics or World Cup?
Look at soccer. You have Euro. You have the World Cup, but then you also have the Champions.
I mean, I think in the two years you don't have any tournament, you have it.
It's a long history. If you look, the World Hockey Championships have been around for a long time. I don't see them just, getting rid of it.
But. So is Drew. We can't get rid of him.
That's true. Before we go to break, Bombers touchdown. Calgary 16, Bombers 7.
Go Blue.
Halfway through the second
quarter.
Shout out
to Tim Bonner, who's sitting in our seats.
Yes.
He won the trivia contest last night.
His sister's actually sitting in our seats.
Oh, the sister.
His sister. No,
shout out to Tim Bonner's sister.
He won the Illegal Curve trivia contest yesterday.
What was the question, Drew?
The question is, Ezzy once ate 2 cheeseburgers and a bowl of cereal before bed and then complained about feeling sick. What kind of cereal was it? The answer was Fruit Loops. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important and stressful life experiences, not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. One more time, that's David Carr of Monopoly Realty. 230-6129. Gentlemen, there's obviously been some collateral damage associated with the lockout. People who rely on hockey for their income and for their businesses and for everything else along those lines. The Los Angeles Kings lost a member of their. He's an employee of the Los Angeles Kings, and he was responsible for the website LAKingsInsider.com.
A very good website,
by the way. His name is Rich Hammond.
Yep.
Rich Hammond used to write...
Can I just interrupt you? Remember last week we were talking about the Stanley Cup engraving story? Remember?
Yes.
That was Rich Hammond who wrote that story.
That's right. Yeah. Rich Hammond used to write for the Los Angeles Daily News. He covered the Kings for a decade.
Yep.
And then the Los Angeles Daily News dropped their sports section. So this is going back a number of years ago. He, as a hockey writer, well-respected, very well-known in the Los Angeles hockey market, he went and worked for the Los Angeles Kings, LA Kings Insider, and when he went to work for the team, the restriction was, or the firewall that was put in place, was that he had pretty much editorial freedom. Even though he was a team employee, the team couldn't dictate, what he writes or criticisms or things of that nature. He was given free rein. It was his website, a journalist doing a journalist's job. Recently, he interviewed, after the lockout started, he interviewed Kevin Westgarth, who is the Los Angeles Kings union rep.
I think he was one of the guys that didn't get his name on the cup, if I'm not mistaken. Did he get his name on the cup?
I can check. I'm not 100%
sure. He only played, I think, 30 or 40 games last year, so just so people know.
He's a
bit of a tough guy. Yeah.
Okay, I think maybe they had to lobby to get his name on the cup, and they successfully did, but not important. Westgarth was interviewed by Hammond, as a journalist is going to do,
yep.
And Hammond wrote about it on the Kings website. Granted, it is an NHL...
I don't think that they... By the way, just back to the LA Daily News, I don't think they actually shut down the sports section as much as they kind of cut down on Kings travel and such.
Right. That's fine. So he wrote about it. He interviewed Kevin Westgarth. He wrote about it. And then the NHL tried to punish him by saying, all NHL employees are not allowed to speak about the lockout. The rule that's in place that affected Jim Devolano.
Well, I think, though, Drew, just to clarify, I was under the impression from the articles that I read that they first asked the LA Kings organization to take the article that he wrote down, and they refused, right?
I think eventually they did take it down, but the Kings tried to push back against the NHL, saying that he was sort of an arm's length employee. He's not a direct employee of the team,
which is the truth.
Let me read you. Let me read you his parting statement that he announced on Facebook. I'm excited to announce that I'll be joining the Orange County Register to cover USC athletics. He's a USC grad, by the way. I had a great 3-year run with LAKings.com, but sometimes making a change is the right thing to do, and I'm excited about having something challenging and rewarding in my future. Thanks to Todd Harmonson, David Bean, Brian Patterson, all my friends and new teammates at the Register, which is the Orange County Register, for giving me this opportunity. I'm honored to be joining such a great group of journalists. A huge thanks also goes to my many friends in the Los Angeles Kings organization. They were outstanding partners for 3 years, and I couldn't have asked for more. Now, Drew, I think an important comment is
Pretty much what the NHL did is the NHL tried to shut down a reporter from doing their job.
Yes. Now, the other side is it's an LA Kings.
The NHL would say he's a team employee, and team employees are not allowed to speak about the lockout without our permission.
What are they exactly supposed to speak about then?
Well, they're not supposed to speak, is what the NHL would have you believe.
Well, there's no hockey. What is he supposed to talk about? You know what? I'm sorry. I'm going off on this. This is absolutely ridiculous.
Where does the NHL get the nerve to try and tell a reporter what to do?
Well, this is the problem you have, and with hiring somebody to quote unquote objectively, and which he was doing, and objectively talk about, you know, analyze the team. You have to remember something, Drew. The reason he was hired basically by the Kings, and it was considered quite a big step at that time. I remember I was doing the NHL morning papers back then. It was a big step because he left and he joined the LA Kings. I'm not sure what his income was, if it was a pay raise or not. But he left the LA Daily News, to join the Kings because the Kings weren't sending anybody on the road. The LA Times, like Helene Elliott.
Yeah. And she wasn't going on the road.
LA Daily News, they weren't going on the road. So the idea was that this team would have coverage, a huge team, a huge market, would have coverage on the road all the time.
And in order
and Hammond, as it says in an Orange County Register article here, got the idea from Mark Cuban, who in 2008 offered $100,000, I guess, or
did
thought
it
of
the
idea for somebody to cover his team 24/7.
Yeah, and Hammond took the job with the understanding that he'd have free reign. He would have editorial control over, you know, he wouldn't have any stories shut down by the Los Angeles Kings.
He accepted the Kings' job under the stipulation, this is quoting the story from his former, I guess, counterpart at the LA Daily News. He accepted the Kings' job under the stipulation his stories would not need approval by any member of the Kings' staff, even though he drew a salary from the team. This is not public relations, Hammond said in his first post.
Right.
I've been told pointedly by the highest levels of Kings management that I should continue to report and write as normal.
And, you know, I got to say something here. As the lone journalism guy, you know, here, I think this is a great idea, and I think more teams should be doing this, and I think it's a complete shame. First off, Rich Hammond is an extremely popular guy and good writer, and a lot of people followed what he did, ourselves included, what he wrote about on the LA Kings Insider. I mean, if you're a hardcore hockey fan, you're looking for your Kings news, you're looking for the Jets news, just like people that read IllegalCurve.com and wake up every morning to read Dave Minuk's morning papers, and a lot of people, that's the first thing they click on in the morning, and, you know, the fact that this guy was writing about the lockout, getting some, you know, giving some substance for all these hockey fans out there who are sitting at home thinking, what, you know, I want to follow my team. What am I going to do? Give me some news to follow. The fact that, you know, they tried to basically, you know, stonewall him, and, you know, it's absolutely ridiculous.
His job is to be an objective reporter.
I think it's important to point out, before you finish your point, the LA Kings tried to go to bat for Rich Hammond, but the NHL said no.
He left.
Which shows you that the NHL didn't have, I mean, you know, whether it was Ron Hextall or Dean Lombardi or whatever, these guys were saying no. I mean, Rich Hammond wrote about this. We're going
to
keep it up there.
That's a good point to mention, Drew. We didn't mention that before, is that the Kings didn't let him go. He left.
Yeah.
He left because he was feeling restricted in terms of his ability to write about the team. And he felt it's his job.
Restricted by the NHL, not the team itself.
What basically we're saying here is
Big Brother just got something spiked.
In Winnipeg, you have the Free Press and you have the Winnipeg Sun, the two papers. And at the end of the day, whether they have sources or not, trying to hurt people's feelings, they are able to write whatever they want to write for the most part. And he felt that this job, when he took it, would be the exact same arrangement. Of course, there were people who were skeptical, and they have proven to be correct over time. Not at the organization's fault, but more so the NHL's fault. And let's be honest here. The NHL wants to control the message. And, you know, if let a guy do his job, he, you know, and I just think that if what you're doing, though, I think this might actually not necessarily be a terrible thing in the future if talented writers won't leave for these jobs because they'll be restricted in their creativity and ability to report objectively on the team. And I think some people who are already hired, you know, Patrick Williams covers the team, the Winnipeg team for NHL.com, is probably a little bit concerned because the NHL has been heavy-handed here as far as I'm concerned. Don't worry about the message. I mean, he's a reporter who's going to have an opinion. If you want to have team reporters who are following the team all the time and have a job to do, let them do it. And if their job hasn't been good enough, let the Kings decide that, whether or not the job's been good enough. I have an issue with this, and I just think that...
Why is the NHL focused on this? Why the guy's not doing anything wrong? He's not editorializing. He's interviewing a player.
There's an inherent editorializing in reporting, Drew.
Well, that's fine, but he's interviewing a player. Right. He's getting that guy's and he's writing a story about it. And just because he happens to work for sort of an arm's length website that's associated with a team, they can you have the right to go in there and start demanding things. What is the benefit? I mean, we talk on the show all the time about what is the benefit for the NHL doing that.
That's right.
Do they not seem like a big bully, a heavy-handed big bully for doing that? And they deprive the Los Angeles market of a guy who's passionate
Passionate and informative.
Reliable.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. You know,
who would take that job now?
Good for Rich Hammond for leaving. I mean, he has integrity. Good for him for leaving. If I was him, I would have left too. And I've never met the guy, but you know, I really think this is ridiculous.
He was here in Winnipeg last year when the Kings.
It's ridiculous. This is a shame. It's embarrassing, the fact that you know we live in a world that this still happens, and Rich Hammond.
Gary Bettman's again, and we're not saying Gary Bettman made the decision, but the NHL is controlling.
But the worst thing about this is apparently there wasn't, you know, I haven't read the article because it was taken down, but apparently there wasn't anything that controversial. It was the principle. And the fact they have a principle with, you know, problem with the principle of a guy who's admittedly not a PR guy for the LA Kings. He's a guy that is going to write some objective stuff. And
well, let me ask you, if nobody can speak on the record about it from a team perspective, what the heck is he supposed to do? If the league's out for a year or two.
If I'm the Los Angeles Kings, I want this guy going to get, you know, an opinion there. And then he can call up Gary Bettman or he can call up Bill Daly afterwards. And he can ask for their comment about what this guy's saying. That's what a journalist does.
Right. That's right.
And that's what we see happen in newspapers throughout the country, throughout North America on a daily basis.
But hey, remember, this is another point, and to me, why newspapers still have a value.
Right, and
independent voice.
With the Free Press, Winnipeg Free Press laying people off, newspapers not doing as well as they can, the fact that guys that are employed,
that's more
know,
so monetizing
it's very concerning.
That's more so monetizing the online product than anything else, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Makes your team more valuable, or makes your product
more
valuable.
I'm talking about, like, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you need to have people paying for it, then you can worry about paying out salaries.
Well, a point
far above my head, but I guess the point is, as he is, you need to have an independent voice. And whether people are a little bit, you know, they're not as harsh and they don't write maybe from a completely objective point of view because of their sources, okay, that's, again, inherent in the reporting business. But at least they don't have that that boss necessarily sitting over their shoulder limiting what they can and cannot do. And if you're a reporter, that's got to be as hard as anything to deal with. And clearly it was hard enough that he decided to walk away.
Bombers are trying to make a game of it. 19-14, Calgary over the Bombers. 2.5 minutes to go in the second quarter. You can catch that game, of course, on TSN. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada, with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org or 204-477-1256. The CGA Association of Manitoba. We see more than numbers. Gentlemen.
Unfortunately, the Calgary Stampeders are also seeing another touchdown.
Not quite yet, but close to it.
I think that was a touchdown. He's down at the one.
Yeah. Speaking of numbers, as we've documented on this program a number of times, the Canadian Hockey TV deal is coming up for renewal in the fall of 2014.
That's a touchdown to me. Okay, yeah?
Looks like you might be right. Anyways, it's coming up for renewal in 2014, and you know, obviously that's going to be a big money deal right now because the rights for sports on television have gone through the roof in the last 5 years.
They have.
And the NHL is now going to cash in on that, especially as it relates to the Canadian TV deal because obviously hockey is most popular here. Article by Bruce Daubig in the Globe and Mail, a good friend of this program, Remus will tweet out that article, talks about, you know, really the players in the next contract negotiation. And right now we know that CBC's got Saturdays exclusively, and that's really the only that's the night that hockey jumps to mind first and foremost as the biggest.
It's the
property.
Sunday. It's the Sunday football in Canada. I mean, that's everybody watches hockey on Saturday nights.
Yeah, they made it that way. Really.
Yeah, and they made it. They made it appointment. Appointment
TV
viewing.
Night, but they made it.
They made it appointment viewing for for Canadians.
What else are you going to do in the winter, Drew? But watch hockey on a Saturday night. I mean, come on.
My point is now: should the NHL be looking and structuring their TV deal in such a way so that there's more of those appointment viewing nights, like the NBA often does? I mean, the NBA has TNT on Thursdays.
Yep. They have ESPN
at Wednesdays and I think Fridays for ESPN.
And then Sunday afternoon.
Sunday afternoons for ABC. Should the NHL be doing something similar in terms of their national TV deal? And baseball does it with Fox and with TBS. You know, Fox.
I don't see why not. I mean, I don't love, Bruce has alluded to, possibly a Sunday night. I think that's too close together.
And then there's the football issue,
baseball, that stuff. But I do think Wednesday night, and if people recall back, Drew, when you were a kid.
Yes, thank you. An age joke.
Hockey Night in Canada was on Saturdays and Wednesdays.
That's right.
So I don't think CBC would get that Wednesday, but maybe TSN gets. And TSN has Wednesday night hockey now, but making it, I think he's saying an exclusive night. Yeah, exclusive night, where there's only a couple games and you're getting prime time, Habs,
because
Leafs kind of stuff.
That's what the
you
NBA,
don't see the Leafs enough on TV.
That's what the NBA does with their Thursday night games, is there's only two games
that night.
That's
exactly right.
You know, everybody else is pretty much, it's not like there's regional games on those nights as well.
That's right.
Thursday night is, there's a doubleheader, and those games are both on TNT, and those are the only games in the league. And, I mean, granted, I mean, I'm not sure how easy it is for scheduling, but they can work on that. If you know that, I mean, they can still be, you know, 14 games, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But Thursday night, you know, to try and attract, you know, TSN and make it that everybody knows if you want to watch hockey on Thursday night or Wednesday night, you have to turn to TSN. They have a doubleheader and they're the only games that are on.
Right. And you know what? TSN, you know, as we've got the Winnipeg Blue Bombers Calgary Stampeders game on TSN here. TSN has done a fantastic job with Friday Night Football sponsored by Wendy's. They've done a great job, and we know that they could easily make that.
Just want to mention Wendy's, though. Is that
are you sponsored by Wendy's?
No, I'm just, it's Wendy's Friday Night Football. That's the sponsor. Anyways, I mean, I agree. Maybe I'm a little bit more hardcore than the average hockey fan. I watch hockey no matter what day of the week it is.
Thank you.
When it's on. But I can't see... You know, picking one night of the week and making that appointment programming and branding it and all that similar to, you mentioned, the TNT on Thursdays. I can't see there an issue with that.
And for scheduling, you
Wednesday night, you make it, because Wednesday night, generally speaking, is a quiet night. They play Tuesdays or Thursdays.
That's right.
You know, Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, or Saturday, Monday, Thursday.
If you look at the Jets schedule from last year, there was, I think, only
five or six Wednesday
games the entire year.
Make Wednesday the appointment viewing. Now, Dalbigan speculates that there might be all three big players in this next negotiation, and we'll see how that plays itself out. But the idea, Drew, that you have a Saturday night, like Hockey Night in Canada, which he says they may very well keep, and then you have the Wednesday, possibly, we're just thinking about this out loud, you have Wednesday Night Hockey now, but you make it exclusive. You make it like Sunday night
that's right.
Football Night in America on NBC in the States, which we get here on TV as well. And you get...
It's the only place to go for a game.
You know, another possibility, what I don't know what you're thinking, I'm thinking out loud here, Drew, but would be to have a doubleheader here in Canada and a doubleheader in the States, have four games that night, and just be primetime national game in Canada on a doubleheader, and then a national game in the States doubleheader, and have that be the national night.
That would work as well. I mean, and it would be good for NBC Sports Network because they would get their. I mean, obviously they have such a reliance on the NHL for their programming.
Yes.
So this would be another way of them sort of taking on that TNT model and going with it, because that works quite well for the. That works quite well for the NBA, and there's no reason to reinvent the wheel and make it more confusing than that. Two games on that Thursday night, or four games as you speculate, whatever it may be, you know, and boom, you're done. You know that you're going to have your national games.
I mean, we know how quickly the NHL and PA can get a schedule in place.
No, but even though CBC...
Come to an agreement on the Wednesday, as long as they can make sure who pays for the... For the flight attendants on the planes to the arenas, we're going to be just fine.
But Richie, even though CBC currently pays, I believe, $100 million a year for this TV contract, I still think they're going to make a push, even though it's going to be tough because you're competing against the TSN, the Rogers, CTV, I think, is in there, obviously,
well,
too.
CTV
and TSN, same parent company. But what's also mentioned in Bruce Dalbigan's article, and this is a possibility, is that you're going to have CBC just have hockey on Saturdays. Yep. That's all they get. Because, as you know, CBC still has hockey on other nights, Sundays, sometimes even during the week. And then they'll get specialty, you know, yep. they'll do the Hockey Day in Canada. I mean, CBC, you know, we all grew up watching CBC Hockey Night in Canada. Hopefully, at the very least, they partner with someone and they can keep the Hockey Night in Canada brand and the whole idea. And
what's
I think
the,
they
let
will.
Let me ask this question. What's the benefit for the NHL to shut somebody out from well, that's broadcasting
the
their game?
That's the whole game. Point, too. And he alludes, yeah. I believe, Drew, I read the article earlier in the week, to the NFL. And that they have so many broadcast partners. And who does it hurt? Nobody.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, in the NFL, they have Fox, CBS, NBC, ESPN, and their own NFL network. That's five networks.
Yeah. And they could do an NHL network. I mean, NHL network. Sure. I mean, they can do an NHL network game of the week just like they
sure,
do
right.
you know, with anything else.
And
like,
still, I mean, still, guys.
Same
I mean,
with Major
TSN,
League Baseball. MLB yeah. Network, TBS, which, I mean, TBS has a national game every Sunday afternoon
right. we
that
here.
We don't get here.
Yeah.
But TBS, ESPN, Fox, I mean, they have their big,
exactly.
their big
and,
contracts.
And the thing is, too, with here on TSN, you know, TSN is still the hockey leader. And the thing is, if it's Rogers, they need to, you know, basically partner up with CBC and whatever, then TSN becomes, like you said, the Wednesday night hockey, plus they do all their hockey. And again, in the article, it says that most likely what we're going to see is all the playoff games are going to be shared across all the networks, as opposed to TSN. I mean,
NFL, as he does this, they do, NFL does first wild card weekend, NBC gets two games,
yeah,
and then CBS and Fox get those their one game each.
Yeah.
And the next
yeah.
week, NBC is off of it, and CBS and Fox do both games, you know, AFC.
After the wild card weekend, right. unless NBC is broadcasting the Super Bowl that year,
that's right.
NBC's done.
Exactly. And they rotate the Super Bowl through. So NBC yeah. gets it 1 year, CBS gets it the next year, Fox gets it to the next year. And that's how it works. So and I guess ABC would get it 1 year too, Drew?
No, ABC doesn't get
okay,
the
so ABC doesn't get it. So,
doesn't get the Super Bowl.
So
anyway.
There you go. So the idea is that just, you alternate every year, and maybe
and,
that's the way it works.
And
maybe
you keep your partners happy. And if everybody's got, if everybody feels as though they're getting the same national
you know about
exposure,
that, Drew, you're married.
Yes, thank you.
But we had Richard Sturzberg on last week, and his idea, his comment was
a couple
at the
weeks
end of the
ago,
day,
yeah,
or sorry, a couple weeks ago. His comment was, it's going to be money. So if you're going to be able to extract yeah. the most money from three partners,
yeah.
because generally speaking, makes more sense if
and if those partners get exclusive nights,
yeah.
you're gonna attract more money, because if TSN knows that they're the only game in town for hockey on Wednesday nights, they're gonna pay more for that than they would if they knew that there was also games available on 14 other regional networks.
And what's it come down to at the end of the day?
It all
yeah,
comes
as long
down
as,
to money.
Yeah, and as long as they don't cancel Big Bird, I'll be happy. Yeah, no, that's PBS. Never mind.
That was really
is that an Obama
random.
Joke?
No, that was from the first U.S. presidential debate. That was a Romney. Oh. Romney said,
Hold on. Big Bird's on CBC too. Do they not play Sesame
yeah,
Street?
But it's originally, I think, a PBS.
It's
program.
A PBS
but
program.
But they play on CBC too, don't they?
Is that Larry Robinson?
I don't know. I liked Oscar the Grouch too. Snuffleupagus. Keep Big Bird on the air, though, people. It's a great show.
That's
a great program.
Really random, even for you. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.